you on your being the speaker today. That was very good.
Madam Chair, I can't quite hear you because my ears are still ringing. I'm stopping to babble so hard today. I mean, I snapped my head.
Right. So we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2591. Paul, do you want to go ahead and give us an overview?
Madam Chair, House Bill 2591 is designed to expand the number of higher education institutions for which students may receive the Oregon Student Assistance Grants. I did put in your packet just the overview from the governor's recommended budget on the Oregon Student Assistance Commission to give you a sense for the dollars involved in that budget. The newly eligible institutions would be those that are headquartered outside the state. The bill does make reference to community colleges in the state and the programs offered by OHSU, but that's because of the deletion of some other language which specifies them as being eligible. So the additional institutions that would be eligible under 2591 are those that are currently operating in Oregon but are headquartered outside the state. And that's the gist of the bill. According to the Student Assistance Commission, there would be 7 new institutions that would be affected by this. There's also, my understanding, an amendment that would limit that to just 4-year institutions. The sponsors have prepared another amendment.
Right. And the sponsors have copies of the amendment. Can we go ahead and help people?
No.
Okay, Stephen Kafari, would you like to come forward? Welcome, and thank you for waiting so patiently.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Appreciate you taking a quick lunch and thank you back to hear us. I'm here today representing two schools in the state of Oregon, the University of Phoenix, and the Art Institute of Portland. We're bringing to you House Bill 2591. Now, if you would take a look at the amendments, please, and I'll explain in a second. The amended bill is what we'd like to address. The original bill was drafted, and I'll take a blame for this inaccurately. What the bill would do is very simple. Right now, in order for a student in Oregon to be eligible for a NEED grant, I guess they call it opportunity grants now, that's a grant given on the basis of student need, and I like to call things the way they are. Opportunity grants to me doesn't mean anything. A NEED grant makes it very clear. This is a grant given by the state to a student to attend an institution of higher education based on that student's need. There are two problems that keep the students at our institutions from being eligible. The first, as you heard from your staff, is that the law presently requires schools to be headquartered in the state of Oregon. The University of Phoenix is located, it's headquartered in Phoenix. It also requires these schools to be not-for-profit, and the two schools that I represent are for-profit schools. So after telling you what Google does, I'd like to introduce two people from the Art Institute of Portland, Steve Goldman, who's the president, and Bonita Oswald, who's a student.
Thank you. Welcome.
Madam Chairwoman, members, thanks very much for the opportunity to address you today. My name is Steve Goldman. I'm the president of the Art Institute of Portland. We have 686 students presently, about 86% of whom are from the state of Oregon, and our institution is a small design college. We offer programs in graphic design, interior design, apparel design, multimedia and web design, and computer animation. We are a regionally accredited institution, originally founded as Bassist College in 1963. Our institution employs many faculty and staff people, but I'm here today representing our students, and my institution in the question of the opportunity grant, it would be remiss of me not to say that opportunity grant would represent a great help to the many students that are at our institution. I think almost $12,000 per student who would be eligible so that their ultimate graduation, their amount of indebtedness at the end of their graduation would be considerably less than it is now. And I've spoken before committees before on this issue, I think 3 years in a row. Out of fairness, I believe that our institution students should be included. Like Bonita Oswald, who is here today, they typically come from high schools in Oregon. They are attending a regionally accredited institution held to the same standards of quality and assessment as all our sister institutions in Oregon, public and private, who are regionally accredited. And we believe that we are doing a good job for the state and for its economy. One of the mission, one of the items on our mission statement for our institution is to help students who complete our programs find profitable work in the state or elsewhere if they so choose. And we set targets for ourselves that are starting salaries for students as well as employment rates, and we've been extremely successful in doing this. And we feel that in that sense, the opportunity grant to our students would be a good investment for the state to help young people find a career that they're interested in pursuing, help them with their the high cost of education, and then contribute to the economy upon graduation. I'm not sure what else I can say to support this question. If you have any questions, perhaps I can answer them.
I think what we could do is just take the next testimony, and then we can have questions after that. My name is Bonita Oswald. I attend the Art Institute of Portland. I'm a senior in multimedia and web design. I've grown up in Oregon. I graduated from Rex Putnam High School as the senior class president, and I continued on to Clackamas Community College and received my associate's degree. After that point, I attended Oregon State University under the Business Administration program. And during my junior year, I took some classes in multimedia, and I found it really interesting, and I found that's what I wanted to pursue my career in. Unfortunately, there they didn't offer that program in the bachelor's program. So I looked around, and I found that the Art Institute was actually the only school that offered a bachelor's degree in multimedia on the West Coast. And I was happy about that because I got to come back to Portland. And but I was sad that I wasn't able to continue getting money from the Oregon Need Grant. So from that perspective, I'm going to have a lot more money to pay back for my student loans when I graduate in June. And I feel like it's a form of discrimination based on I wasn't able to get this funding based on the school that I chose. So something that would have helped me out a lot, and I wouldn't have had to make as many sacrifices as I needed to if I were eligible for this grant.
Thank you. Any questions?
If I could, Madam Chair. Stephen, with the limitations in the amendments, just so I make sure I understand the -1 amendments, limiting this now simply to four-year, for-profit institutions. Is that essentially what the -1 amendments do? They changed the original bill and limited it just to four-year for-profit institutions?
Mr. Chair, Representative Williams, yes. The original bill and the amended bill both bring in students who attend schools that are headquartered out of state. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't change the amendments. You're correct in the difference between the amended bill and the original bill, just 2 years to 4 years.
2 years to 4 years. In Oregon, currently, which schools does that impact?
Mr. Chair, Representative Williams, I would ask you to get that question also answered from the Scholarship Commission.
Okay.
But as I understand it, there are a few students who attend the nursing school at Walla Walla College who do their internship in Portland hospitals. So, there's a small number of those students who would be impacted. And the City University, understand what the impact is. My knowledge is there's four schools altogether, and I represent two of them.
Okay.
Mr. Kafouri, we're looking here at a fiscal impact statement. It talks about the Art Institute of Portland, Cascade College, University of Phoenix, and Walla Walla College of Nursing. Those are all four-year. And then you were also saying City University isn't included.
No, I'm sorry. It's Cascade. They've changed the name.
Oh, okay. So that is Cascade. Okay, so those are the four then. The four that are listed here are the four that you were also referring to then. There's none.
Madam Chair, that's my understanding.
Okay. Could I have another question, Madam Chair?
Representative Williams, yes, you may.
Thank you. And maybe this would be better directed, you know, to either of the witnesses, including you, Stephen, if you want. But it's my understanding that both the Art Institute and the University of Phoenix, who are the two clients that you represent, do already have some financial aid programs. I mean, so I guess the point I'm trying to make here is that even these for-profit institutions are using some of their own resources to try to run financial aid through the program. So it's not strictly as if you're coming here only looking for financial aid. And I guess I'd like you to tell us a little bit about that.
Madam Chairwoman, in addition to the federal programs that our students are eligible for, we fund approximately 2% of tuition revenue back into the form of scholarships to students on a quarterly basis.
And Mr. Kafori, is there something similar to that that operates for University of Phoenix, do you know?
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, it's me, Representative Williams. If you'd ask that, they're going to be here and testifying.
Oh, okay, good.
Madam Chair.
Representative Bates.
Thank you. With your permission, I'd like to ask a few questions if I could, and some of this would be from my ignorance, so you know, if you would please bear with me. As I understand the bill, this would expand it to profit and non-profit also. I mean, the non-profits are already, and what Representative Williams said, I thought I heard him say, was an extending it to profit only. This is profit and non-profit institutions, I assume.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, yes, schools like Willamette University across the street, Lewis and Clark Reed, students who attend those schools are presently eligible for NEED grants.
Right. Follow-up question, which is my entry into my next question. The monies that we're talking about, the Oregon Student Assistance Commission handles, include loan guarantees, the NEED grant, which I think has a new name now, and other programs. The funds going into this that you'd be bringing back out for your students, are they primarily loans, grants, or a mixture of both? And the second question, that is, my understanding is the Oregon NEED program has been, I've had the sense it's been underfunded. There are many students wanting much more than they get from this. There are many students who are eligible to get Oregon NEED funds, but because of a lack of funding, in fact, don't get it. Do you have any information on that?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, our students are eligible for loans at this time. It's the NEED grant, or the opportunity grant. It's the formal name for it, right? I like to call it NEED grant because we know what we're talking about. The second part of your question was?
The first part was I want to know if it's loans and right. And grants, and if grants are available, do you know if there is a shortage of money for grants? Because I've been told that there is, and that if you're expanding the number of students trying to get to those grants, it means less for everybody.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, there is a shortage of everything, and the longer you're in the legislature, you're going to find out that there is not one single program in the state of Oregon that's fully funded, perhaps with the exception of our prisons. I can say that with a little bitterness, I will. In terms of the students who are eligible, the number of people who get it, as I understand, and you'll have people from the Scholarship Commission, or they call it now Student Assistance Commission, to testify, and you should get a more definitive answer from them. But as I understand the issue, it has to do more with the amount of money than the number of students. But that's a formal question that you should ask.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any more questions? I just have one question. So you were saying, just to clarify, that you actually qualified for a NEED grant, and then just because you changed schools weren't able to continue that.
Yes, and I understand that not everybody is going to get those grants, but at least like to have the opportunity to have to apply for those grants. And I'm just as much of an Oregon student as anybody else. Have the opportunity.
and just to clarify one more thing, and you were saying that the program that you were interested in wasn't available at the school where you could have kept your grant, and then by moving to the other school, you in essence lost eligibility to be able to continue your education with the grant.
Yes, that's correct. They offered it as a minor, but not in a degree.
Well, thank you.
Thank you
so much. Pat Handy?
Madam Chair, I have two more witnesses on me.
Is it?
Pat Hardy.
Pat Hardy, okay, that's in Rona.
And my handwriting is probably...
Yeah, well, trying to read it here. I taught junior high, so I can read almost everything.
Sorry about the shot on the floor.
That's okay. No problem.
Good.
We just have your word.
Thank you very much. Welcome. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Pat Hardy, and I'm the campus director of the Oregon campus, University of Phoenix. I'm here today not to represent the University of Phoenix. Rather, I'm here as another advocate for those Oregon citizens who also happen to be or may in the future become students at our university. In other words, I'm here to make a case that all Oregon citizens should be eligible for state financial aid, regardless of their choice of university. The University of Phoenix was founded in 1973 to serve the educational needs of working adults. The university recognizes that in the United States, our work environment has gradually changed from one of lifelong employment with one employer to one of lifelong learning and employment with a variety of employers. Lifelong learning requires an institution dedicated solely to the education of working adults, one which provides the convenience, focus, and quality required by the student and his or her employer. Consequently, the University of Phoenix offers classes in the evenings and weekends when our students are finished with their workday. We locate our campuses in satellite learning centers where the student has a reasonable after-work commute to class. And our faculty is not only academically qualified, but they must possess at least 5 years of practical experience working in the field in which they teach. Although the University of Phoenix may be relatively new to Oregon, it is not new to the practice of higher education. The university has been regionally accredited by the Higher Learning Commission North Central Association since 1979. This accrediting agency is the same that accredits academic programs at other universities, for example, Notre Dame and the University of Texas. This is the same standard to which other regionally accredited universities of Oregon are held. A recent segment of the television news program 60 Minutes highlighted the high quality of education provided by the university. Our students and alumni also attest to that. The quality and accreditation of the University of Phoenix programs are not all we have in common with traditional universities. We are not dissimilar as much as we are complementary. We think of our role as one that complements that of traditional universities, which rightfully emphasize continuing education for graduating high school students and those who can afford full-time pursuit of their education. We present a quality education opportunity for those students whose geographical location or work and family preclude other options. As you may know, the University of Phoenix opened here in Oregon in 1997 after approval by the Office of Degree Authorization. Our main campus is located in Tigard, and we have established learning centers in Hillsboro, Clackamas, and Albany. Currently, we have 1,450 students enrolled, most of whom are residents of the state of Oregon. We also employ approximately 250 part-time faculty members and administrative staff of about 50 people. Our student recruitment target is a student who is at least 23 years of age, is employed full-time, and who has or can qualify for some college credit. The average age of our currently enrolled student body is about 35 years old. Many of our students are married. Our students state the reason for selecting the University of Phoenix is that the convenience of our hours and location allows them the opportunity to complete a degree while fulfilling the demands of full-time employment, family life, and other activities. Many of our undergraduate adult students choose this opportunity to complete an uninterrupted education begun earlier in life. Even though approximately 75% of our students receive some level of corporate financial assistance from their employers, and nearly all are employed, a few do qualify for need-based financial aid. For these students, an intense desire to improve their education means stretching their personal financial resources so thinly that they subsequently qualify for federal financial help.
of our 1,100 undergraduate students, approximately 220 currently receive federal Pell grants. They compete for this financial aid on an even footing with all other students in all other academic institutions. That is not the case with Oregon Opportunity Grant, and it is unfortunate for them. Eligibility to qualify for these grants might mean the difference between completing their degree or not. For other working adults, an Oregon Opportunity Grant may mean the chance to begin their education again. It is on behalf of these Oregonians that I address my closing remarks. The policy of our legislature on student financial aid is established in statute and provides that the state of Oregon can achieve its full economic and social potential only if all Oregonians have the opportunity to contribute to the full extent of their capabilities and only when financial barriers to their educational goals are removed. For the University of Phoenix, a for-profit university, the amount contributed to the bottom line by the amount of an Oregon Opportunity Grant is comparatively small. However, for some of our Oregon students, the Oregon Opportunity Grant could mean the removal of a financial barrier to full achievement of their full educational, economic, and social potential. Thank you. Thank you. Questions? Please, is it Rona?
Rona, yeah. I was just here to help answer any questions. I'm the Director of Finance for the University of Phoenix Oregon campus. So, no additional testimony.
Glad you could be here today.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
If I may, just want to apologize to our witnesses and committee. Just flew in from Chicago about an hour ago and zipped right down here. I thought since Representative Carlson was doing such a good job as vice chair, I'd let her finish.
Well, I would just like to commend Representative Shetterly for his diligence in coming to the Revenue Committee.
With no time. Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you so much. And I believe next on the list is Thomas Turner from the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. Is anyone with you?
Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Tom Turner. I'm the Director of Special Services for the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, which is the state agency that administers the program, which for years has been called the Oregon Need Grant, but through the actions of this legislature and House Bill 2993 last session, they changed the name to the Oregon Opportunity Grant. I regret that I have to list myself as a person opposed to this bill because there are certainly needy students, Oregon students, who are attending these institutions, but this inclusion of these students is not part of the governor's budget at this time, and I think we're all mindful of the stresses that are being had simply to provide funding for those issues that are in the governor's budget. The opportunity grant right now in the governor's budget is listed as having a recommendation of $39 million worth of funding for the biennium. And were we to include the students in all of the institutions that were mentioned in the original version of the bill, it would take at least an additional $4 million to fund those. With the amendments that have been suggested by the proponents of the bill, reducing the number of new eligible institutions to the four-year institutions only, I think the price tag comes down to something in the neighborhood of $1.6 million for the next biennium. Representative Bates is correct. There has been a chronic problem in funding all of the students eligible for this program in the past. Our estimate is that for the next biennium, if we do not receive any additional money beyond the governor's recommended budget, and if we see increases, particularly in community college enrollment, that are similar to those that we saw this year, we will be approximately $17 million shy of funding all eligible students, which is something like 8,000 eligible students per year who we would have to turn away for lack of funding. Unfortunately, to open the program to this population of students who are equally as deserving will simply compound that problem and make additional hundreds of students for whom there is a promise of eligibility, but in fact no eligibility at all, unless additional resources can be found for the program to at least match the needs of those additional students who come into the program. There's one point that I'd like to address that came up in questions before. There's some question about what is the character of the new institutions that would be added to the program, and there are really two kinds of institutions. For-profit institutions that are degree-granting accredited institutions, and then also degree-granting accredited institutions that might be nonprofit but are headquartered out of state. So the change does two things. It makes for-profit degree-granting institutions, which might be headquartered in Oregon or outside, eligible, and it also makes nonprofit institutions that are accredited degree-granting institutions eligible. Now, in the summary of who would be served, there was some mention of City University. At the time we originally did the fiscal impact statement for this, City University had not put itself forward in inquiring about being an authorized provider of degree-granting education in Oregon. So they are not on the list, and the cost of any potential students that they might have is not included in my fiscal impact statement. Since that statement was prepared, City University has contacted the Oregon Office of Degree Authorization and has put forward proposals to offer degree programs in Oregon. It is an institution that operates reputable programs like this and is accredited, so there probably will not be any problem with their inclusion, but the students within that institution who might be eligible have not been estimated, and the cost of including those students is not in the present fiscal impact statement. I might mention also that the whole area of extraterritorial institutions putting themselves forward to offer classes in Oregon has gotten to be a very busy aspect of the world in the last 4 or 5 years, and we are not certain how many additional institutions that would be covered by this new eligibility language might present themselves and gain the proper authorization to operate in Oregon in the future.
Thank you. Just to clarify, so the comment about Cascade College and City University, those are indeed two separate institutions.
Madam Chairman, that is correct. Those are two separate institutions. Cascade College is here right now. It was formerly a site operated by an Oregon college that went out of business, and then it was revived under the ownership of a nonprofit institution which is operated in the Midwest in Kansas, I believe.
And let me ask you one more question. The nonprofit degree-granting institutions headquartered out of state, does your list include then all of those as well as the ones that are for-profit degree?
It includes all those that were in view at the time we prepared the fiscal impact statement. So Walla Walla College and Cascade were the two nonprofit but headquartered out of state. University of Phoenix and Art Institute of Portland were profit-making, also headquartered out of state. And we believe City University, which is headquartered in Bellevue, Washington, will soon be another institution added to this list.
Other questions? Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. From reading the testimony that was provided by the folks from Phoenix University, University of Phoenix, it looks to me that at the federal level, Pell Grants are provided to students from these types of institutions on an equal footing with students at 2 and 4 year traditional institutions. Yeah. Do you know if that's correct?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Witt, that is correct. Any institution, nonprofit or profit-making, which is accredited, may participate in the major federal student financial aid programs. So Pell Grants, that is the largest grant program for needy students that's available in the United States. That program is available to those institutions. And in fact, when we did our estimate of the students who would likely be eligible for the Opportunity Grant Program, the information we requested from these institutions was a count of their Pell Grant recipients, because the two populations overlap. They're both programs that are aimed at the poorest students in terms of economics that are in the institutions. So all of these institutions do indeed participate in the Pell Grant Program.
Follow-up, Madam Chair. If indeed that's what's done at the federal level, wouldn't it also be appropriate to apply the same criteria to Oregon relative to the Opportunity Grant for a minute, taking aside mm-hmm. the dollars for a minute, just looking at the fairness issue? Shouldn't the same criteria apply?
Madam Chairman, Representative Witt, our own commission has debated this question a number of times and more than once has brought decision packages to this body asking for the inclusion of students in Oregon for-profit institutions that meet certain requirements as far as the character of their accreditation and also the students meeting the same income criteria. So we have a history of asking for that exact thing, but to this point have not received the assent of this body. And in this particular case, the governor's office said for this biennium that this was too expensive an issue to entertain. But it was raised by our commission during our own budget request this year.
Follow up. So is it safe to summarize then from your testimony that you agree that from a standpoint of fairness or equity, these students should be included on an equal basis for opportunity grants, but your only unwillingness to support this specific legislation is simply a matter of the dollars available?
Madam Chair, Representative Witt, the benchmarks that we tie into in Oregon benchmarks are getting Oregonians, more of them, to have degrees or at least some experience in college. And we view institutions that are accredited degree-granting institutions as on an equal footing. We have, through the Office of Degree Authorization in this state, some of the toughest academic criteria that post-secondary institutions must comply with in order to offer courses to Oregonians. So we feel confident that any institution that meets the criteria of the Office of Degree Authorization is an upstanding institution which is offering good quality education.
I assume the short answer was yes.
That's what I heard.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Just a couple quick questions, Madam Chair. And my first question is, looking at your funding, is there any matched federal funds that come into your funding program from our state general funds that are put into the Student Assistance Commission?
The Representative Carlson, or Madam Chair, Representative Bates, the funding of the Oregon Opportunity Grant is somewhat complex. The largest source of funds is the general fund. And of the $39 million that is in the governor's budget for this program in the next biennium, probably $32 million comes from the general fund. We also receive lottery funds through the Education Endowment, where 15% of net lottery revenue goes into the Education Endowment, and then earnings on that endowment are parceled out, 75% going to the K-12 education system and 25% going to this program. And so that adds about $5 million for the coming biennium. Then we also participate in a federal program that was designed to stimulate states into beginning their own need-based grant programs years ago. The acronym for that program is LEAP, Leveraging Educational Assistance Partnerships, and we get roughly $1 million a biennium from that federal program. And then through the actions of the legislature in the last session, we were able to take money being repaid to us by student borrowers in certain programs that are now defunct for new participants. We were able to take those repayment monies that are coming to us and deposit those in the need grant program or the opportunity grant as well. And that's some $250,000 or so. So those are the sources of funding that we have. The lion's share is the state general fund, and the other amounts are somewhat inelastic, very valuable to the program, but somewhat inelastic.
So the short answer is no.
Well,
match funds.
Well, the
state and federal funds. We have other programs.
I don't think it's similar to Medicaid.
Yeah, we have other programs where we put up 40%, they put up 60%. Those kind of programs aren't available.
Yeah, Madam Chair, the character of the so-called LEAP program is exactly that. We must match a certain number of dollars to continue receiving the federal LEAP dollars. But there are only about $1 million of biennium, and we are overmatched at this point by a huge margin through the state's funding of the Opportunity Grant Program.
Follow-up question. What you're saying then is that there is a limit on that match. We've already gone past it.
Yes.
The other question I have, Madam Chair, is one we also face in health care, and that is what we call our basic benefit package. And what happens is you decide if you want to eliminate people from the package and give a really rich package, or if you want to spread that package out and try to cover more people. It's a thinning of the soup, if you will. In the particular program we're looking at for you here, it appears that the decision's been made to keep the package, even though it's limited, as rich as possible for a number of students and not try to thin that package out over a larger number of students.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Representative Bates, the soup has been thinned by 50% since the program first began. When we first began awarding grants in this program in 1971, we were able to give an individual student a grant equal to approximately 20% of their total annual cost of education to the student. That is down to 11% now. So over the years, inflationary increases, current service level increases in the program have not kept pace with the costs that students experience, and the maximum size of one of these grant in relation to the expenses that the students have has half the purchasing power that it once had.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions? Thank you so much. We have Jeff Winkler and Kathy Campbell from Chemeketa Community College and Melissa Unger from Lane County. Are you alone or are you someone else? All right. Do you have other people with you, or do you want to, why don't you come on up, and then that will complete our list here. All right. So, Jeff, you want to start?
Yes. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak here today. My name is Jeff Winkler. I'm currently a second-year student at Chemeketa Community College here in Salem, Oregon. I'm just about to graduate this spring and hopefully go on to Oregon State University, where I'll study political science. I wanted to have the opportunity to talk to you today. I'm a graduate of McKay High School. Graduated back in 1993, went directly to college, found out that was a real bad experience in my life, didn't work out real well. So I spent 7 years working in retail, selling cars, selling appliances, pretty much selling anything that wasn't tied down. But after going through many jobs and having many cutbacks and shortfalls, I decided I was going to go back to school. So I went back to school, applied for financial aid, got a little bit. I went through my first year of college, struggled. I have two kids. I have a wife. It was very very difficult for me, but I decided it was worth it. During that first year, I was one of the 11,000 casualties, I guess you would call them, one of the 11,000 that was not funded under the Oregon Need Grant. I did qualify, but unfortunately, there was not enough money for me. This year, I was lucky enough. I applied early enough to where I was actually able to get the NEED grant, and it's meant a lot for me. It allows me to buy my books when I need them. It allows me to pay for my tuition and the fees that that I incur. I wanted to talk to you guys today about the importance of that. I feel that it's very important that every student be given an opportunity for these NEED grants. I know the importance myself. I know that sometimes it means the difference between putting gas in the car and not, or having to ride the bus. I think it's very important that every student be given this opportunity. But unfortunately, like I said, I was one of the 11,000 who had not been given the opportunity to get this money. We had mention of splitting the money up a little bit further. I received $339 a term. under the Oregon Need Grant. That's for approximately 3.5 months of school. That barely pays for the books that I have to purchase every term, and that doesn't include tuition or living expenses or food or gas or any of those things. So I think it's very important that we try not to thin that out anymore. I know as a struggling college student that it's very difficult. If you guys had an opportunity to walk through the lobby today, you saw the top ramen and peanut butter and jelly that they were serving out there. Unfortunately, that's not as much of a joke as we all like to think it is. So that I ask that you guys please consider the ramifications of everything we do here. I think, like I said, it's very important that every student be given this opportunity, but I also feel it's very important that every student be given enough money to make it worthwhile. I think that if we were to cut this down any further, it comes down to the point where it's actually not doing anything for students. According to the wording in the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, it can fund up to 50% of education, but yet we're at 10%. So I think it's very important that we watch what we're doing here and that we figure out a way to fund these Oregon Need Grants. I think it's a great opportunity that we give these schools the money to do this, but we've got to figure out a way to fund it. So I ask that you guys, when you consider this, please consider the funding ramifications and please consider what you guys do very carefully.
Just wanted to let you know, Schenectady Community College is a very excellent institution in Salem, Oregon. Kathy.
Thanks. For the record, my name is Kathy Campbell. I'm the financial aid director at Schenectady Community College. Thank you very much. And I just came here today to talk a little bit about the program, about community college students. Our students look a lot like the same students that were described to you that go to other institutions. The average age of community college students in Oregon is 37. Fall term, there were about 50,000 students last year, I want to say all of last year, that Chemeketa served in both credit and non-credit. And of those students that we had fall term, 25% of our students work 35 hours or more a week in addition to going to school. So you can see that any money they get in financial aid, they really need. And they're not working those hours because that's a good thing to do, especially with school. So they're doing it because resources are very rare to these people. And they are highly independent. That means that no one else pays for their educational costs and living expenses, much like Jeff. And so we do put together packages for these people of a combination of federal and state programs, our own institutional money. We all give institutional scholarships and tuition waivers as well. And even with all of those, it's very difficult for these students to meet their expenses. So I'm really sort of here to fill in gaps if you have them. I worked in financial aid in Oregon for 29 years. So if you have questions about how we do those things, I'd be happy to answer those. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's hear from Melissa and then we can open up.
Madam Chairwoman, members of the committee, my name is Melissa Unger and I am a senior at the University of Oregon and I'm here to represent the Oregon Student Association. Unfortunately, we also have come to oppose this bill based not solely on the fact that it's not a good idea, but that right now, in the year 2011, 1,000 students were turned away from receiving the Oregon Opportunity Grant. And until we can fully fund all of those students, it would just further thin the soup if we added more students to the pool of who would receive this grant. So pretty much that's all I came to say, is that unfortunately, until we can fully fund the students who already need the grant, who are being turned away, it seems hard to put more students into the pool.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess the question I'd have for the three of you about this is that I think what I've heard each of you say is that you don't necessarily object to the students who have chosen these four-year for-profit institutions as their educational vehicle of choice, that you don't theoretically have any objection to them being accessible or having access to the NEED grant. Your objection is just simply that you don't think that we're currently funding the NEED grant at an appropriate level. Am I right about that? Could I maybe get a comment from each of you about whether or not I've assessed your objection to the bill appropriately?
As a college student, yes, you are correct. As a college student, I feel that it's very important that every college student be given an opportunity to get funding. But I also feel it's very important that if we're going to offer this funding to the students, that we have the funding available to give it to them. I see it as a cruel joke in order, if you tell people that there's money there for these grants, then to say, okay, you 11,000 don't get it. I don't think it's fair.
Okay, thank you. Kathy?
Madam Chair, Representative Williams, yes, I would totally concur that I would say financial aid for students that need it is very important. And I think the state's share of that is very important as well. My concern is that for many years, and working primarily in community colleges, we had a larger share of those unfunded students for many, many years. In previous bienniums, that number was maybe $7,000 of community college students who were turned away because they applied later in the year and that money had run out. In the last session, that got recognized and righted, and so there was an equal share of those students. So the Student Assistance Commission actually stopped awarding by segment to try and create a better balance of that. So my concern is, you know, even at community colleges, the average loan debt that these people leave with is $7,000. That's a significant amount of money. And the more grants that you take away from those people, they'll have to borrow more money. And so really that's the whole issue, I think, here.
Madam Chair, Representative Williams, I think that's correct, assessing what I said, is that it would be great if everyone could receive this, but I'm a current recipient. There was a year that I couldn't receive it, and I go to a four-year university. I'm going to graduate with over $25,000 in debt. The fact is that until we can fully fund those students who already are eligible, it's almost impossible to add more students to it.
If I could follow up, I guess one of the concerns I have is, and I recognize what you're saying, and I said as a member of the Blue Ribbon Commission that evaluated the entire financial aid issue over the last interim, and attended, I think, almost all of those meetings. I may have missed one of the meetings of that commission. But I came away reasonably convinced that you know, A, there is a need, and it's a substantial need with respect to financial aid. And I'll, you know, go down swinging, suggesting that we should leave it as it is, because we shouldn't. But I also believe that a key component to this is allowing people to make choices, educational choices. And I worry that the approach that you're suggesting that we take, which is to say there's not enough room in the lifeboat as it is, so don't let anybody else get on, actually then, you know, limits the choices of certain students who are in a situation like the young woman we heard, who had to lose her financial assistance grant opportunity because she chose to go to this Portland Art Institute, the only place on the West Coast that had the program that was offered to her. I guess I would be more in favor of saying, you know, let those people onto the boat, but then let there be, you know, an adjustment of the needs assessment process by which you give to the people who are in the most need and who qualify to the greatest degree. And some of those people might be, based on their circumstances, at one of these other programs because it's the only way they can get there. And so I'm a little worried that we're limiting the size of the lifeboat in a way that doesn't appropriately allow those dollars to follow the student, which is generally one of the key philosophies that I think we're trying to adopt with respect to higher education within the state. I'm happy to take a response to what wasn't really a question.
Madam Chair and Representative Williams, I'd like to respond to that, actually, because the reality of it is students make choices every day, not only about the type of institution they attend, but the program that they can afford to go into, right, knowing what kind of, and it's not just grants, it's about loans. You know, students are saying they can't go to veterinarian school, they can't go to other kinds of schools, because when they get out, they aren't going to have money to pay for car payments and house payments and all kinds of that. So even with fully funding the Oregon Opportunity Grant Program, students would still be forced into those kinds of choices.
And Kathy, if I could just sort of dialogue here, I don't think that's inappropriate. I mean, when I decided after graduating my undergraduate degree that I wanted to go back to law school, I only applied to one school, and that was Lewis and Clark. And while I love it and I got a great law degree, I chose Lewis and Clark primarily because it had an evening law program.
Mm-hmm.
So I could continue to work during the day and get my job and feed my family and try to pay for law school to avoid that debt and go to law school at night. So, I mean, it is about making choices, but I'm not sure that we ought to necessarily be tracking the choice of dollars in the way we're doing by limiting it to people who might have another alternative. For some people, it might be only evening classes at the University of Phoenix. But to the extent they qualify for the NEED grant, I'm not sure saying simply because they've chosen the University of Phoenix, they ought not to be included.
Mrs. Dunhouse? And then our phantom chair.
phantom menace.
Be that gap.
That was an amendment that wasn't accepted by the chair.
if there's not disagreement on the policy here, we're really framing this in a budget debate. This is probably more of a ways and means issue than it is anything else. And I just think that there's maybe not. While there may not be much opposition to doing this, adding these schools in, there is also sort of this reluctance that I can't quite get my hands around about doing more for getting people through college. And I still don't understand it, because it's a lot of people see this as somehow you're benefiting by going to college and graduating, and surely you are. Statistics show how much you'll make over a lifetime versus not doing that. But we still haven't gotten around this concept where we also benefit if you are well educated and end up not necessarily in law school, but if you end up in some other
right between journalism school.
yeah, right.
Yeah,
the press is so.
So anyway, that isn't a question. That's just I guess I'm just making a comment.
Thank you, Representative Shadoon.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. First, I want to know why Representative Williams is so cranky.
Just been that sort of day, Mr. Chair.
The other thing, I guess, and this is just more of a comment than a question. Are we done with witnesses? Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. I missed the testimony, I think, as to how many students would be covered by adding these new institutions. But as I understand, the debate is sort of that we're already not providing scholarship assistance to X number of students. 11,000, was that it? Okay. And so the concern being that by adding these students or bringing them into the lifeboat, I guess, from these other institutions, that we will be excluding then more students. I'm not sure, I guess you could say that we are already excluding that number already simply by not qualifying them for the scholarship. And so it's really... In one hand, would we really be excluding more students, or would we be giving everybody at least a shot through the door before they end up on that exclusion list, whereas now some are excluded simply on the basis of the institution for which they've applied to attend?
I just wanted to respond, Madam Chairman, it's not that they don't qualify. The 11,000 students do qualify. They are low income enough. They just don't get it.
That's what I mean.
Because there's not enough money for them to receive it.
But I guess that doesn't change the general tenor of my comment, though.
Yeah, I just heard part of your testimony, so if you responded to this, that's great. But what I picked up was that we have a limited number of dollars now. We're not meeting the needs now of students who qualify from institutions that fit into the program. But I didn't hear you saying that these students at these other institutions that this bill would also include are any less deserving, or is the program of study any less deserving? Is that correct, that you in essence agree that they are just as deserving and their program of study is just as deserving?
Madam Chair, Representative Witt, I would totally agree with that. I believe that every program a student takes is deserving, and these institutions have accredited students just like any of the other institutions that this program serves. We just came today mostly to talk about, you know, the lifeboat concept, and I know Representative Williams sat on the commission as I did. And it is a struggle. I mean, there is not enough money. That's the bottom line. But we would not, I would say any one program at these types of institutions are any less deserving than any others.
Madam Chair, follow-up?
Sure.
So wouldn't it be better policy to, instead of just categorically excluding these students who are in deserving programs and deserve the financial aid, wouldn't a better approach be to tighten up the requirements to make sure that the most deserving students get the support from a whole class of students who are in deserving programs? Instead of just excluding some of them arbitrarily through statute?
Madam Chair, Representative Witt, I think the biggest thing that we're asking for here is not that we exclude these students, mm-hmm. because, like I said, I don't want to see any students excluded. I just ask that if we're going to include these students, that we figure out a way to pay for it. I mean, whether that's through the Ways and Means Committee, I mean, we've sat before them before and get a feeling for the limited budget that we're facing. But I think it's important that if you're going to open up the pool to more students, that we figure out a way to also fund those extra students. If we have 11,000 students now who aren't getting it and we add 5,000 to it, that's still going to make 16,000 students who aren't getting the money. It's just going to be a different 16,000.
Madam Chair and Representative Witt, I think another thing is that we already have limited who receives this fund. The lowest of low-income students receive this, and I think that that is something to look at. I personally am not an expert on the numbers, but I know it's families who make under a certain amount of, like, $17,000 a year or something, and I know that if you have two children go to school, it goes up a little more or something like that. But I do know that it's the lowest of low-income students who really can't afford to go to school, who receive the Pell Grants and all those types of things that do receive this, and so it is already pretty limited to who can receive this and who is qualified for this grant.
Other questions or comments? Or philosophizing? No, okay. Thank you so much. Is there anyone here that wanted to testify on House Bill 2591 that didn't sign up that would like to come forward? If not, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2591, and our time has been well spent today, but we don't, I think, have time to have a work session on 2208, so I'll leave it to the Phantom Chair and staff to determine when that needs to come back, and also 2717, and the only person that signed up on that was Bill, so we'll have to carry that over another day as well. So appreciate all of your comments and attention, and we will close the committee. Adjourn.